We're talking baseball on the show today. We're talking baseball. No, listeners, really, we're talking baseball today. Here we go. Snap, crackle, and pop.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, it's real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. Batter up, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants are Jets, Yankees are Mets, Knicks are Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
A-O-B! And please pardon my fresh as we bring you an all-new episode of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, today is Monday, February 25th, 2019, and this show airs every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, CastBox, AudioMac. Yes, we are rolling deep, so to speak, listeners. And if you got any questions that you'd like for me and Mad Mike to answer on the air, you can always shoot them through email to lloyd@partmyfresh.com, or you can send them directly to the website. So be sure to hit that subscribe button, listeners, to the show, so you won't miss a damn thing. And me and Mad Mike are also on social media, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Instagram, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter, LLOYD. Be sure to hit that follow button. We have a special show for you today. This show is strictly dedicated to baseball listeners as spring training has started for the New York Mets, for the New York Yankees. There are still free agents, top free agents, that are out there in the open market. So we have our sports guru, our friend, Joe Rivera, sports columnist from the Sporting News, calling into the show to break it all down and to answer all of our questions. So as always, listeners, let's buckle up, sit back and relax, and start spreading the news. Hey, yo, let's get it.
How sweet it is. It's Monday. That means the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show is back. Let's go.
As always, we got to find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from. Yo, Mad Mike, where you at today, baby?
Lloyd, I'm down here in the racist south.
Yo, oh, man. Yo, man. Being that you said that, man, Mike, normally we save your rant to the end of the show, but because you started off with that, we're going to do a little twist and start your rant off at the beginning of the show before we bring on our special guest. So get ahead, Matt Mike, get your rant on, brother.
I'm going to try to be as measured as possible when I say, I hope all these racists get off the stop kneeling, you know, situation and complaints, because I don't understand how you can green light in Mississippi. I don't understand how you can green light a Confederacy march on campus grounds at Ole Miss and then get upset with college basketball players who decided that they were going to take a knee simply because they were tired of the hatred and they didn't respect the message being done on their campus. I don't understand it. I just don't get it. Everybody wants to be upset. Kaepernick takes a knee. They want to be upset. Malcolm Jenkins is putting up a fist. But they allowed a Confederacy, a Confederate march, a white is right march on campus grounds at Ole Miss. They have three white basketball players. And you're allowing this? Anybody?
Listen, man, after what you just said, I really ain't got nothing to say, man. I think it's sad, but, you know, we always say that this is today's society, and it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. Now, if I'm a black athlete on that campus, I'm transferring to another school. Simple as that.
No, because supposedly the school did not green light this. Apparently, they don't have to go through the school to have this march approved. And they didn't. The coach supported the players. The other issue I took with is there's like three or four players that didn't kneel. How do you not take a knee? Anyway, yeah. Let's talk about some sunshiny Tampa Bay, Tampa, Florida baseball or something.
Listeners, we got one of our favorite guests on the show today, Joe Rivera, sports columnist from the Sporting News. Joe, thanks for joining the show, man. It's always a pleasure for you to have us on the show. How you doing?
Lloyd, Matt, Mike, I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
Oh, man, listen, there's a lot going on and a lot not going on in baseball with this free agency thing going. Are you a bit surprised at how long it's taken for the top free agents to sign this offseason?
Yeah, you know what I am. And when you consider that Machado got the $300 million he was looking for at the end of the day, granted it was from a small market team with the Padres, it is surprising to me. I think baseball is in a spot now where it is so big and financially it's so strong and revenues are at an all-time high that these teams shouldn't be hiding behind the fact that they're broke. I just don't buy into that. I don't buy into the fact that the Cubs are broke right now and the Ricketts don't want to spend money. I'm sorry, I just don't. So, yeah, I'm a little surprised that it's taken this long. I mean, we knew it. J.D. Martinez didn't sign until February 26th last year, and he had a monster year, regardless of how you felt about J.D. Martinez before last season. But, yeah, I'm a little surprised, especially with Bryce still being on the market now. Machado, it took him until February to sign, so... Kimbrel's still a free agent. Dallas Keuchel is still a free agent. Two very serviceable players. Some of the tops of their positions. So, yeah, I'm surprised it's taken this long, Lloyd. I don't know what the holdup is with these owners.
Now, here's the thing, Joe. This is what I wanted to ask you. So, Machado signed for $300 million, and was there any offer from the New York Yankees on the table? I'm hearing reports that they offered him around $240. And if they did offer him $240, is $60 million, so to speak, enough to deal with losing? You see Robinson Cano, he took the money in Seattle and was miserable. So did the Yankees ever have an offer on the table? Was that true? Was it not true?
You know, it's a multifaceted question. I don't think the Yankees ever actually offered him a contract. I just don't. I think that they wanted to be in that $220 to $240 million range. All reports are saying that they didn't want to go to 10 years. I think that if the Yankees did offer him a deal, you probably would have heard about it weeks ago. You probably would have heard about it when they had Machado in the stadium the following week when they had that dinner. You know, I think you would have heard about it. So the fact that we went this long and heard only two solid offers, one from the White Sox who offered up to $350 million with their incentives and with the Padres where Machado ultimately signed, I don't think the Yankees were really in on him. And I don't think the Yankees ever really had interest. And I think that you look at the way that they brought Machado in and they had the dinner, it all seemed like window dressing for the fans, saying, hey, look, we're fake trying, which I think is a bit more disingenuous than just not being in on Manny altogether. So, Yankees. Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
No, I was going to say, how much of that window dressing is due to his October, you know, his perceived lack of hustle on the bases? I know that historically he hasn't really been a loaf as far as analytics go on the bases.
Yeah, he hasn't. And I know that he was above average last season when it comes to runs from base running, which is a metric that's pretty self-explanatory. How many runs above average you are at base running. And he was above that. So, you know, not everybody runs hard to first. I mean, I put a joke on Twitter that said, you know, maybe if Manny hustled in October, he would have gotten $301 million. I mean, who knows? But I think it's pretty ridiculous that narrative continued. He didn't cost himself $50 million. It's just the fact. He didn't cost himself $20 million. He got exactly what he was looking for. I think with the $300 million, some of it is a little bit concerned with his knees. Maybe, you know, going the 10 years, part of it too, not wanting to go $32, $33, $35 million a year. I think that's part of it too. But, yeah, I don't think really October played into it, considering that the biggest teams that were in on him, the White Sox who wanted him from day one, the Phillies had their meetings with him. Those are all the teams that we figured that would be talking to Manny in the first place. So, yeah, I don't think October really played into it as much as people made or wanted it to be.
Now, with Machado being with San Diego, I know, you know, there was reports that one was waiting for the other to sign, and now that Machado has signed, now Bryce Harper is going to try to eclipse the number that Machado has signed, and now I'm hearing currently that Bryce Harper is meeting with the Phillies, and I'm hearing reports that the deal might be done as they're speaking to the Phillies owner in Vegas or something like that. Do you think a deal is going to get done with the Phillies, or is that smoking guns?
You know, I really think that from day one that Harper was going to be a Philly. I didn't think he was going back to the Nationals. You just got the feeling of that was done. His time with Washington was done, and the Phillies were the only other team really willing. The owner, John Middleton, even said that they wanted to spend stupid money. So I expect the deal to get done there. I don't really think the White Sox are in on him. It feels like they were really in on Machado and nobody else. So when they get Machado, that kind of closed their window for whatever reason. I'm getting Harper. So, yeah, I think he's going to be a Philly. All reports are pretty much saying that he's going to be a Philly, and that's going to happen in the coming days. So we'll see where he goes. And he's definitely, I think for a fact, he'll probably get more than Manny did, especially with the owner trying so desperately to try and win with Philly and to try and get something done there. And wanting to spend the money and not really strike out, no pun intended, on this offseason. So the ball is entirely in Boris's court. It's entirely with Bryce Harper. They have all the leverage right now, I think. And we'll see how much he gets. I mean, I'd be willing to bet he gets anywhere up to a Stan-type extension deal, 325, maybe up to 350, who knows. But I think he's going to get his money, and he's going to get more than Machado.
So, Joe.
Go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, my question here is kind of twofold. One, I'm assuming if you sign, the Phillies have fully committed to Rhys Hoskins going back to first base, if you're considering putting Bryce Harper in that outfield. And two, with the trades that the Phillies have made this offseason, where do you put their farm system as far as once Bryce comes in? We know that San Diego has the number one farm system, so paying Manny Machado big money doesn't necessarily hurt or shorten their window, because they should be able to contend long-term if everybody turns into what they think. Philly traded a lot of talent this offseason. How do you think that will hold up over the long-term with Bryce?
You know, I think everyone that Philly needs to contend or their core is, they're essentially the Yankees, where their core is in place now, between Scott Kingery, Rhys Hoskins, Aaron Nola obviously is the stud there. They have all the guys that they want in key spots. Odubel Herrera got his big extension a few years ago. So I think that they're not really concerned as much with the farm system, and they're still a really, really young team too. Trading away Carlos Santana was big for them, bringing in Gene Segura, who's a solid, pretty under-the-radar player from Seattle, was a good move for them. I like what they did. I don't really think they're concerned with the farm system right now as much. They still need big-time help in the bullpen. They still need help at the end of their rotation, so I don't think they should be done there. With Harper, he helps. You look at the way that they look at Philly's offense from last year, and they were at the bottom third in a lot of major offensive categories. Anything you want to check, you want to check their OPS, I want to say they were 14th. Their average, they were 10th. Their home runs, I think that was the only one where they were in the top 10 offensively. So Harper's going to help them. And you hope that a lot of these guys take a big step forward this upcoming year. But I think he's definitely going to help their lineup. And the guys that they really want on the team moving forward are here now, which is why I think they're so high on bringing Harper in.
Now, with this, if Harper does sign with Philly, does this put Philly atop the NL East, above the Atlanta Braves, the Nationals? Do you think this move primes them to win that division?
You know, it's a really good question, Lloyd, and you have to look at that division around them. I think the Braves are a really well-rounded team. They have good players top to bottom. Obviously, Ronald Acuna had a monster year. He was Rookie of the Year last year. The Nationals are the team that's most intriguing to me, because they're still really talented even without Harper. Juan Soto had a massive season last year. He was in second, I want to say, in Rookie of the Year voting. And you also have to consider Victor Robles, who's another one of their star outfielders, young star outfielder. He's going to have a full season, and he played incredibly well in a small sample size. So you figure that both of those guys will kind of offset the blow of losing Bryce Harper. The Mets are also improved. I think that, you know, the biggest question with the Mets has always been health and bullpen. I think those are the two biggest things, health, bullpen, and depth. I think those are the three big questions that they face every year. And I think Brody Van Wagenen has done a good job in trying to remedy at least two of those things. You can't really fix health, you know, Jed Lowrie, line one. But, I think that the Phillies have a little bit more to go. I mean, they did finish under 500 last year. That division was sluggish heading into September. It really kind of felt that nobody wanted to grab it and run away with it. So I think the Phillies are still probably up there. I mean, they're obviously going to be in contention. Should everything work out well for them, health, if Aaron Nola has another big season, if Jake Arrieta has another pretty good solid season as a number two or three guy. So I still think they're up there. I don't think they're head and shoulders above anybody else, though. I think until the Braves fall out of it and the Braves prove they're not legit, then I think it's probably their division to lose.
Now, going back to Machado real quick, Joe. I mean, obviously, you said, you know, at some point the Chicago had an offer on the table, and it seems like the offer on the table was more than what San Diego was willing to offer. What made him choose San Diego over Chicago, especially being that he has a brother-in-law and a good friend on the White Sox?
I think it was the guaranteed money. The White Sox were willing to go $350 million, but the $250 million was guaranteed over 10 years, so... You figured a lot of those incentives were probably tied into playoff performance, maybe World Series MVP type stuff. And I'm sure that that wasn't really tickling Machado's fancy, to be honest with you. You know, and to be honest with you, I don't think the Padres are as far away as people think. They have to have a lot of these guys pan out. Mackenzie Gore is one of their top pitching prospects. He has an ETA, I think, late this year, early next year. The shortstop, Tatis, he's got to come up and be an impact player. But I think that in that division where nobody knows what the Diamondbacks are trying to
make. They have Mejia, the catcher.
Yeah, they have Mejia, catcher. So, yeah, I mean, they have a lot of top prospects and a lot of them ready to make an impact. But, again, I always like to say prospects are suspects until they prove otherwise. So you can't really bank on a lot of these guys being impact players at the next level until they actually prove that they are impact players at the next level. So, yeah, I think Machado picked them for the dollar amount more than anything else. If the Yankees even came close, you know, if they said, you know, we'll give you 260 over X amount of years, or we'll give you 280, I think he probably would have chosen New York over San Diego. But I don't think that the Padres are as bad of an option and as bad of a move for Machado as people are kind of making it seem early.
Go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I think being able to play the Dodgers 19 times and sources said that the Dodgers really just were not happy with his work ethic. They didn't think that he was a good teammate in the locker room. So I'm sure that to me, I would just absolutely take a chance to you know, kick their butts just, you know, 19 times a year for the next 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, some of that, it's weird because how long was he with Baltimore? And you never heard a bad thing about him with Baltimore. But for some reason, he goes to Los Angeles and all of a sudden they're trying to air his dirty laundry for some reason. I don't understand why. He played great for them. He had over 900 OPS with them. He turned around his defense at shortstop for them.
And he was never coming back, Joe. He was never an option. Forget about Corey Seager.
Yeah, he was never coming back. Turner and Seager are the two guys that at third and shortstop respectively. And Seager, when healthy, he can be a top 10 player in baseball. So, yeah, he was never coming back there. And I don't understand why people are making a big deal about it. And I'm sure that San Diego is apparently a nice place to live, right? 70 and sunny year round. So, yeah, I think it's a good spot for him. I really do. I think it's good for baseball that he did go to maybe a smaller market team. Now it's up to Major League Baseball in order for him to not be forgotten, kind of like what Robinson Cano was. So we'll see how they really leverage that. But, yeah, I don't think it's a bad move for Machado at all.
Now, what is the holdup with Dallas Keuchel and Kimball and all the rest of these guys? I mean, it's like I said, it's just baffling to me that so many top free agents are still available on the market. I mean, are they going to play like that? You know, are they going to wait and see, and hopefully the team gives in during the season? Do you see them signing, you know, a one-year deal? How do you think this is going to pan out? And have you heard any news about those guys talking to any teams at the moment?
No, nothing at all, Lloyd. And it's weird because you look at, I think for Kimbrel, it's a bit more understanding because I think teams are just unwilling to really go big bucks on relievers now, considering everybody's coming out of the pen and throwing 95 for the most part with a nasty slider. So you couple that with the fact that relievers are just very volatile year to year, and they can be inconsistent. You can run down any of the top relievers in Major League Baseball, and it's so hard to find guys like Mariano Rivera and Trevor Hoffman anymore. I mean, guys you can count on at the back end of the bullpen. Craig Kimbrel was not really good in October last year. I think people seem to forget that too. And he's 31 years old, so I think that 6-year, $100 million, whatever he was floating out there, is a bit ridiculous to think that he would even come close to that, to be honest with you.
I mean, if you think about it, Kenley Jansen was, you could say the Dodgers lost the World Series because of Kenley Jansen, and he got a 5-year, $80 million deal. You could say the Yankees would have won the division had Aroldis Chapman not, you know, had an off year. So I totally understand it. But I will say this. I think that a great landing spot for Kimbrel, going back to the owner that said we're going to spend stupid money, if you land Bryce Harper, Kimbrel makes all the sense in the world.
Absolutely does. And I already saw that Middleton isn't afraid to spend money. I mean, he gave Andrew McCutchen $50 million this offseason. It seems a little bit lost in the wind there. But funny thing is, with McCutchen, just as a side note, somebody asked him the other day, you know, why did you pick Philly? And he says, did you see what they were offering me? So, yeah, the owner isn't afraid to spend money there. And I think, yeah, Kimbrel does make a lot of sense in that bullpen. And the same thing with Dallas Keuchel in the rotation. You know, Keuchel he led the majors in hits allowed last year, but he also had 27 of 32 starts where he allowed 4 runs or less last year. He hasn't been bad. He just hasn't. He got off to a rough start. He's been a little bit inconsistent over the last few years, but if you're telling me that I could have Dallas Keuchel at 4 years, $80 million or 4 years, whatever it is, $18 million a year, why would I not want to do that? He's a lefty. He's a former Cy Young winner. So,
hey, yeah, I don't really know. Him over Jay Happ.
Yeah. And I was just going to say that if you're the Yankees and you're signing Jay Happ to a 3-year deal or 2 years with an option, I don't understand why you would make that deal over bringing in a guy like Keuchel, who, as I mentioned, is a former Cy Young winner, especially given Happ's age and just general inconsistency over the last few years. That's a move, honestly, that didn't make sense to me. And you figure that Happ was kind of brought in for the Yankees to be that Red Sox killer last year, and he got waxed in the playoffs. So,
we'll talk about that. I do feel this was an offseason where I felt like Brian Cashman operated kind of like the New York Mets normally do, where, you know, you look at the Brett Gardner signing and then you see what Michael Brantley got. And you're saying, hey, if I could have got Michael Brantley for 2 years instead of Gardner, I think I might want to do that. Like you just mentioned, do I do half over Dallas Keuchel? I certainly do. And another guy to look at is Marwin Gonzalez just got $3 million less over the same time period as DJ LeMahieu. Would I prefer to have Marwin Gonzalez than DJ LeMahieu? I mean, I would. It just seems like I know we're complaining about a slow market, but it does look like some teams just made bad decisions causing this.
You know, I got to be honest. I look at the Yankees offseason, and I say they played it very, very, very safe. I think that's it feels almost like there's a lot of pressure on the team and they just didn't want to make those moves where they're like, oh, well, you know what, maybe this guy isn't, you know, looking at a guy like Dallas Keuchel, maybe you have to pay him a little bit more than Happ. But you know, again, if you're telling me Dallas Keuchel or Jay Happ, I mean, give me the former Cy Young winner. And I think that you look at, like you mentioned, like DJ LeMahieu, whose career splits are not good away from Coors Field. And then you realize that they kind of expect him to play into that utility role, which is something that he's never proven he can do in his career. That doesn't really make sense to me either. I mean, you can poke holes in all of these guys. I think the ultra loyalty to Gardner and CeCe is going to, I don't think it's going to hurt them per se, but you know, at some point you just have to cut bait. And I understand CeCe wants one more year, and the same with Garner. You don't think he's probably not going to be a Yankee past this season. But like you mentioned, Michael Brantley's a guy he couldn't really stay healthy the last few years, but he's going to hit 300. He's going to give you 15, 20 home runs. He's going to play pretty good defense. And you figure that he came up as a first baseman. He played a lot of first base in the minors. He played a little outfield. Maybe that helps you at first base too. So, yeah, I'm not really sure what the Yankees were doing. I mean, on paper, a lot of these moves make sense. You can poke holes in a lot of these guys in a lot of their cases, top to bottom. But I don't think it was as great of an offseason as the Yankees want to make it seem. I think it was a okay offseason, maybe even good if you want to go that far. But I'm certainly not enthralled with everything that they've done.
I mean, me and Matt Mike feel that they deceived us as fans. You know, they said one thing and did something completely different. But before we move on to the Mets and Yankees, do you think there's any chance that Dallas Keuchel or Kimbrel returns to their former teams? Keuchel going back to Houston, Kimbrel going back to Boston. And, I mean, the Yankees are always, they've always tied into everybody. And I also heard reports that the Yankees might be looking at Dallas Keuchel as well. Is that a bunch of hoopla also, Joe?
Yeah, I think so. I think the Yankees are pretty done at this point, unless Keuchel's price really comes down and Jim Crane, the owner in Houston, has said a few times, you know, I wouldn't mind bringing Dallas back, but he made some allusions to his asking price. So you figure they don't really want to spend the money either. They could certainly afford him, the fourth biggest market in the country. So they could afford him. They could afford to bring him back. I think that they need him back to a certain point. I know Forrest Whitley, their top pitching prospect, is ready to make an impact at the next level. But again, if you're asking me for a sure thing like Dallas Keuchel over an unproven prospect in a year where you're going to have to start winning again, and I know they made it to the ALCS last year, but you know you're expected to win a World Series or compete with one again. And I think that Keuchel could be a big part of that. I don't think he's going to be a Yankee. I think if anything, he could go back to Houston, but we'll see how much his price drops and where he ends up there. I don't really know. I don't know where Keuchel goes. It's strange to me that there's been no buzz surrounding him whatsoever.
He's another guy that I can see going to Philadelphia. Yep. If they land Bryce Harper. He's just another guy where I really think Bryce holds all the cards for them. I think that as soon as Bryce goes, you're going to see them. They're going to get in on both of these guys because, like you said, they're fairly young and fairly cheap. So that, which is why we all assumed the Yankees were going to do this because they have a 3-year window where they can really load up these contracts and compete before they have to start paying other guys. It's I can see him going there too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I mentioned before, I think he makes a lot of sense for their rotation, who outside of Arrieta, who was pretty inconsistent last year, had a good year, but he was a little inconsistent. And Nola, obviously, who probably wouldn't Cy Young in any other year that Jacob deGrom wasn't as good as he was. I think that those are two. Outside of those two, they could really use a guy like Keuchel, kind of stabilize that rotation.
Now, if let's just say Philly does sign Harper, then they turn around and go after Keuchel and maybe Kimbrel, does that then surpass them over the Atlanta Braves for the NL East division winners?
Yeah, I think so. And I think the biggest question mark for the Braves isn't the lineup as much as it is the rotation. And they've really had a questionable offseason, to be honest with you. I do like their talent top to bottom, but not going out and trying to get a top-of-the-rotation type guy, not really being in on anybody, doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. Mike Fultonet, which had a very good year last year, Tuki Toussaint was a revelation for them. But I don't really see anybody in that rotation that screams, yeah, I'm gonna shut you down. Every fifth day, I'm going to win. And I think that they kind of missed the boat there. Depending on where Keuchel goes, he's not gonna end up in the win. I doubt that. But yeah, I think that at Philly, if they do land Kimbrel and Keuchel and Harper, I think that puts them at the top of that division.
Yeah, I love them getting JT Realmuto.
Yeah, I think that Realmuto is a little overrated, to be honest with you. But I think so. I think he's good.
Not much better than Gary Sanchez defensively. Go look at the numbers. It's
exactly.
Really not.
I mean, so in other words, we would have rather the Yankees kept. Glad that the Yankees kept Sanchez and didn't go into that whole thing with trading him for Realmuto or Noah Syndergaard, which was was that trade actually a proposed deal? Joe, Noah Syndergaard coming to the Yankees, Sanchez going to Miami and Real Muto going to the Mets? Was that actually on the table?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of sports talk stations in this area, Lloyd, that like to make something out of nothing. I don't really think that was ever on the table, to be honest with you. It would have made a lot of sense for all three teams, to be honest with you. But at the same time, it would hurt to give up a bat like Gary Sanchez if you're the Yankees. And
No, it wasn't Gary. It wasn't. It was Andujar.
Why
the trade made all the sense in the world. It was Andujar and Frazier were shipping out.
Yeah, I think that if it was Andujar, then it probably would have made sense too, because then you get your second ace behind Severino, and that really fixes the rotation big
Matt
time.
Mike
so
always says that he feels that Sanchez is the Yankees' best hitter.
Yeah, he can be when he's right. He absolutely can be. I think that last season, a little bit of his conditioning, a little bit of him wanting to swing for the fences all the time, I think his approach was a little out of whack. I think he probably fixes a lot of that this year, and it's going to be a big jump going from being a 180 guy that he was last year, just an entirely lost season. You almost have to kind of look at it as every player kind of loses a season in their career to injury at some point. I think you have to look at Sanchez's season as a year where he just lost the year due to injury. And ineffectiveness. So if he can get right, he can absolutely be their best hitter, but his approach has to be right. He can't be swinging for the fences all the time. He's got to just look to make contact and the power will come.
All right, so look, we're going to take a quick commercial break. And while we have Joe still with us, we're going to take advantage of it, listeners. So we'll be right back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, this is our special edition of baseball, being that spring training is kicked off. We're all excited about that, at least most of us. So I know I'm excited, and I know Mad Mike and Joe is excited. But now, Joe, we want to move on to our New York team, the New York Mets and the New York Yankees. We'll start off with the New York Mets, where the New York Mets accordingly have added a lot of depth to their team. So it's going to be interesting to see your thoughts on that. And you have Robinson Cano coming in, a 36-year-old Robinson Cano, come in and saying he's feeling the youngest that he's ever felt in his life. I don't know, how do you feel young when you damage your body using steroids? So what's your thoughts on those two things, Joe?
You know, I guess Cano being back in New York, getting to have some legitimate Dominican food as opposed to being in Seattle probably helps him a little bit, to be honest with you.
Seeing some sunshine instead of all that rain.
But really, I think Cano is such an interesting case because he did hit, after the steroid suspension last year, he hit over 300. So it's kind of a question mark what he's going to be, but I do generally like what the Mets did. I think the biggest what leaves a real sour taste in my mouth is the fact that this is really just the same old Mets. They're a team that doesn't want to take on money. They don't want to spend to get these guys. Brody Van Wagenen has done a good job operating within his means, within those payroll limitations. So I think he's done a pretty good job. Edwin Diaz obviously shoring up the back end of that bullpen. He was probably the best reliever in baseball last year. So yeah, I'm interested to see what the Mets are going to be. I think they are improved. Again, health is the biggest question mark with them, as it's always been. And one of their free agent acquisitions, Jed Lowry, is already on the shelf with a knee issue. So we'll see how he works out in the coming weeks. But yeah, I think that they've done a pretty good job altogether.
Now, what happens at first base? You think Pete Alonso is going to be the starting first baseman? Do they go with Dominic Smith? You know, me and Mad Mike on the previous show, we did our starting lineup on who we thought was going to play where with the New York Mets. Who do you think starts off at first base opening day for the New York Mets?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think it's going to be Smith over Alonso, only for reasons of team control. And I think also they want to give Dominic Smith a chance at first base, like they haven't really done that in the past. And I really think that Dominic Smith, they've been really unfair to him. You bring him up when he was in the middle of a cold streak, then you stick him in the outfield where he wasn't really any good. He never really played, as opposed to playing him at first base. And I understand that there were some conditioning issues there too, or conditioning questions, I should say. But I just think they did wrong by Dominic Smith, not really giving him a chance to play his natural position for whatever reason. So I think it's going to be Smith probably for at least the first month of the season. They're going to give him a fair shake, and then depending what Alonso does in the minors, and he just crushed the home run yesterday, so he's clearly ready for the big time. But you know, all the service time stuff is going to come into play, and they're going to want that extra year of control. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see Alonso until May.
Now, Mike, who was we talking about last week where I was saying the Mets might stick him in left field? I forgot his name.
Jeff McNeil?
The second baseman. Help me out here.
Jeff McNeil,
right? Yeah.
You know,
and Mike was
saying that he doesn't think that's the best idea to put him in left field.
Look,
what do you think?
Joe, the reason I say this is because there seems to be a going theme with this organization, right? We saw them commit to David Wright at a time where they had Turner, who gets traded or ends up leaving, becomes a stud with the Dodgers, right? We saw them do this to Daniel Murphy, where it took them 5 years to figure out that Daniel Murphy, where he was going to learn to play after moving him off third base. We then saw it, we keep seeing it, right? And that would say we saw last year with Dominic Smith. Now this year, McNeil's the guy that he's athletic enough to play left field. I mean, at some point we have to just stop throwing guys, you know, out there or wait till they're big league ready to, you know, make them change positions. Like, play this guy second base, let him hit. If people really do think this kid can hit, let him hit. Let him show that he can field, you know, decently, and maybe trade him. I don't understand the sense in, you know, they got Keon Broxton. Move him to left field.
Yeah, I don't really understand it either, Mike, to be honest with you. It's some kind of weird organizational thing. I mean, this is the Mets. A lot of things that they do doesn't really make sense, right, at the end of the day. Yeah, McNeil should be playing second. I mean, obviously you're bringing Cano, and he's a roadblock there now. But, you know, maybe Cano at some point, maybe he moves over to first. Can't play second,
but he can't play first because then you're forced to change positions with Alonso.
Yeah, and that's the problem. I mean, sometimes too much depth is a good thing, right? But when you have a guy like McNeil who hit 330 last year, albeit a pretty small sample size, but he showed you he has the right approach at the plate, and your outfield, you know, they like to say they have six outfielders or whatever it is, but you know, three of those are spare parts for the most part, so. Yeah, I don't really know.
You have six, you don't have any, right? It's the old adage in football.
Yep, that's right. So I don't really know. I don't know. I wish I had an answer for you, Mike. I would love to see McNeil play one position and stick there, you know, maybe third base. Who knows? I don't know. They're saying he doesn't have the arm to play third base. Todd Frazier.
Well, if he doesn't have the arm to play third base, then let's stick him in outfield where you're going
to
get guys.
Guys
are going
to
go first to third.
Guys
are going to go first to third on your left fielder. That never happens in baseball.
Mike, I wish I had an answer for you. It's the Mets doing Mets things. It really is. I've always said I don't like in baseball the idea of I don't like the idea of forcing guys to play positions they're not comfortable with. I'm really not. And it seems like...
Forced versatility?
Yeah, forced versatility. That's exactly it. And I don't like that idea, really. And we saw the Yankees have problems with that for a few years in the Joe Girardi regime. Just sticking guys in positions where they're not comfortable, and it just... The ball always finds you, right? And I think that... I think that that's one of the issues that the Mets have kind of had. And under Terry Collins, it was the same thing. He always screwed with the lineup early in the season. He took guys out of their comfort zone, sticking them in different places. And you're seeing it continue with the Mets. I don't really know what the end game is.
I only have one question on them left. Lloyd, you go ahead. I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to talk about third base. Because you mentioned him possibly playing third base, which wouldn't be the brightest idea. But you have Jed Lowrie, who's dealing with the issue, and you have Todd Frazier. And I'm hearing that they might move Todd Frazier to first base. And if they move Todd Frazier to first base, then what about Dominic Smith and Alonso? Like, what is going on? How do they even play this out, Joe?
You know, I don't know. I think that Frazier, his best position, he has played first base in the past. He played a little bit with the Yankees. He played a fair amount with the Reds, and he was with the Reds. Joey Votto was on the shelf with an injury, so he's not totally unfamiliar to first base. But he's a plus defender at third. So if I could stick him there and leave him there and hope that he can stay healthy in 2019, I think that he's a pretty good option for them, all things considered. McNeil would be an option, I suppose, at third base. Who knows? I feel like the Mets have more depth, but I feel at the same time they also have fake depth. it just doesn't feel like, you know, you're looking at a team and saying to himself, wow, they have too deep at every position like the Cubs had a few years ago and what the Astros had. It kind of feels like they have a lot of warm bodies, but no guys that really scare you. I mean, Jed Lowry was a good signing, but does Jed Lowry really scare you in a lineup? I know he doesn't for me, so... Yeah, Lloyd, I really don't know. I don't know what the Mets are going to do. I don't know how they're going to play this. I don't know what guys they're going to put where. I guess that's really what spring is for. We're going to see what Callaway has in store.
So, now, true or false, Joe, the Mets have the best starting rotation in Major League Baseball?
If this were 2 or 3 years ago, I probably would have said yes. But I just think that we're playing the game now where you have to hope that all of these guys stay healthy. I think Mickey Callaway did an excellent job with them for the most part last year. Obviously, Zach Wheeler had a fantastic year. Noah Syndergaard, when he came back from injury, he was good. Jacob DeGrom, we know what kind of historic season he had last year. Steven Matz is always the question mark, how healthy he can stay. I thought Matz was going to be the best out of the bunch that came up, just because he was a lefty throwing 95. You know, his frame is a little wiry, but that's always something you can love about a guy when he's left-handed and he's throwing hard, but, you know, the injuries kind of derailed him, so we'll see where he goes. And then at the back end, you have Vargas, so who's really nothing of nobody. So I don't know. It's tough. On paper, potential, I think that's probably maybe fair to say. I don't really, just on the power of DeGrom and Syndergaard alone, I mean, those are two guys, they're two aces, and it's hard enough to find one in Major League Baseball. So I think on paper it might be fair to say, but at the same time, it's really difficult to put that on them when they haven't really proved it over the years.
Yeah, Mike, you wanted to ask Joe something?
Well, I was going to say, considering that Brody was DeGrom's agent, how do you think Brody handles this potential innings limit that DeGrom and his team are going to impose or threatening to impose this year? When I first heard it, I instantly thought of Brody and saying, you know, this is the tactic he planned. You know, this is what he told them he was going to do if the Mets wouldn't, you know, give him an extension. And now you kind of hear them come out with this plan, and he doesn't seem like he's open to a contract extension for DeGrom.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, Brody was the one that said last year, either trade DeGrom or pay him. Those are the two options, and it really doesn't seem like they're interested in paying DeGrom right now. I don't understand how it hasn't gotten done. 5 years, 125, 5 years, $20 million, $100 million. I think that could be on the table for the Mets. I really do. But yeah, I don't know. I if something were to get done, it feels like it would have gotten done by now. It seems like there's no real public negotiations, at least, happening. So who knows when it's going to get done. The innings limit, I really, you know, if the Mets are in contention for a wild card at the end of the year, I don't really think DeGrom's going to say, you know, pull me out after 4 innings. I don't see that happening. But yeah, it's, if you're Brody, it's such a sensitive area. And this is why I had a problem with the Mets bringing on Brody to begin with, because it's just very unethical. And I understand he has to, quote unquote, recuse himself from these negotiations, and he's not even supposed to be involved. But when you have a guy that's been negotiating for a player for years, all of a sudden you're trying to negotiate against the player for ownership, it just seems like there are ulterior motives there for the Wilpons. So, yeah, who knows how it's going to get done, when it's going to get done. If it's not done yet, it's not going to get done this season.
And if their interest is in contending, I mean, to have that looming, I can't imagine that he let it go there. Consider that Luis Severino and Aaron Nola just got, you know, team-friendly deals of $40 million and $45 million each. At this moment in time, they're scheduled to make more money than DeGrom has made in his career. That's pretty sad.
Yeah, and DeGrom is certainly worth it, and I think that some of that is players scared of injury, and they're also scared of free agency now when you consider how slow the market has moved. So Yeah, I'm a little surprised that the Mets haven't worked hard. Well, maybe I shouldn't be surprised, but it's concerning that the Mets haven't worked harder to get an extension done with DeGrom. And considering there's been pretty much no talk from the Mets part of it, trying to get that figured out, makes you wonder what DeGrom's long-term future with the team is.
Do you think that hurts the Mets as far as them resigning him and as far as him being displeased with the way they're handling things and cause him to want to move elsewhere at this point?
You know, I think that DeGrom is never going to, you know, he's always smiling. He's never going to be the guy to kind of to air the dirty laundry, right? If he's displeased, then he's done a really good job of not really showing it publicly. So I still think, you know, if it's 2022, I still think that DeGrom's going to be a Met. Again, and we've seen in the past that the Mets aren't necessarily afraid to spend money. It's just it's been a question of who they spend money on. I mean, they spend money on Beltran. They spend money on Cespedes. They paid David Wright. They're very, very selective in who they pay. And I think if there's anybody that you can pay and should pay, it's got to be DeGrom.
I agree. Not that the Yankees seem to be penny pinchers at this point as well. You know, as Hal Steinbrenner came out and, you know, he said that they're not penny pinching. And, you know, I just felt so deceived by Hal Steinbrenner and, you know, the fact that the Yankees were under the, you know, the luxury tax. And as fans, we got excited because we're saying, oh, they're going to go out and spend money during the offseason. And then the offseason comes and they did. I mean, they made some moves. But, I mean, as far as I feel like an empty soul right now as a Yankee fan.
You'll feel empty for the same reason I feel empty, and that's because it's not that there was money to spend, and it's that there were clear upgrades. There were clear guys out there. You know, for example, you waived Ronald Torres, but you have a super utility guy there like Marwin Gonzalez. You have this brutally, brutally, brutally bad third baseman, defensive third baseman, and here comes a 26-year-old that probably never hits the market in any other sport, and you don't even consider it. And we can go. We already touched on some other guys, so that's why you feel empty. It's not that they didn't spend money; they clearly spent money. You just feel like they cheated you out of upgrading and improving this team.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And if you Google any of the times that Hal Steinbrenner has talked about the luxury tax, he said in the past, we're not afraid to blow past the luxury tax if there's a guy out there worth having. And if you don't believe that Harper isn't a guy worth having or Machado isn't a guy worth having, then who is? And I said this before, at some point the narrative's got to stop because now you're hearing, oh, well, you know, it was never about Machado. Now they love Nolan Arenado next season. And then in another 3 years, it's going to be, well, they didn't like X player, but they really love Francisco Lindor. So, yeah, I really don't know what the end game for the Yankees was in order, you know, you figure, well, we're desperate to get over this luxury tax for this season for these two free agents and then to not even play a part in either guy. And I thought Harper, all things considered, was probably the perfect fit. You know, you could stick him in left field. He's a left-handed batter. That short portion in right field is going to play to his strengths. The same with Machado. You figure that you can play him at third base, maybe trade Andujar for pitching help. It doesn't make sense to me. And I think that with the window being right now to win a World Series, you can't really worry about arbitration or free agency 3-4 years from now for the Yankees, I don't think. And you have to make those moves now.
I saw it going in the wrong direction when they re-signed Brett Gardner and CC Sabathia. Now, I get it. You want to be loyal. You want to be loyal to players that are giving you their all. But it's also business. And signing him didn't make any sense, Joe, when, you know, me and Mad Mike was just saying that they want Clint Frazier to be the starting left fielder. So why would you even say, I get, you know, Frazier has his issues and stuff. But why even do that if you have Bryce Harper on the market?
I agree.
I really don't get that.
First of all, sorry to jump in here. I don't necessarily think that Clint Frazier in the grand scheme should really prevent the Yankees from making a move for Bryce Harper. There's an avenue for Clint Frazier to still be the future. Aaron Hicks, yeah, he's improved every year, but Aaron Hicks hasn't shown you he's worth $20 million a year, which is certainly going to be his asking price as a center fielder with 30-30 caliber type skills. But he's a hot and cold guy anyway. Frazier used to play center field for the Indians. the Yankees moved him to left field. So people that think that, hey, this is not like the Mets saying, hey, this guy can go play here. It's talking about a guy that played that position while he was in the minors for another organization. He can do the job. Bryce can be your left fielder. Dust can be your right fielder. And Stanton can be your DH filling guy on the corners if need be. There was no reason for this.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. And I think that you heard a lot of the reason that Frazier struggled in left field a little bit defensively is because he just wasn't used to playing it. By all accounts, he was actually a plus outfielder with the Indians when he was in center field, so coming up. It was just a question of his attitude, his maturity. That was the main reason that the Indians ever got rid of him in the first place, and you figure he's probably gotten past that at this point. So, yeah, there was certainly an avenue, like you said, Mike, for Frazier to still be the future with the Yankees while signing Harper. There's no reason that one should preclude the other, especially when you consider Brett Gardner. This is probably his last year in pinstripes. I don't know if he retires and goes somewhere else. I don't know. That remains to be seen, but... you also can't use Jacoby Ellsbury, you know, as a reason why you can't sign these guys, which is what Cashman tried saying back in December. You know, we have six outfielders, all this stuff, when you can't really count on three of them on a regular basis. And Aaron Hicks is going to be a free agent. And like you mentioned, Mike, he's probably going to be asking for that $18 to $20 million switch hitter. He's got power. He can steal base. He plays plus defense. But he's got to keep it together and he's got to stay healthy too. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they never threw their hat in there, had in the ring, and you're here because they want to keep their guys. But at the same time, you can't, like I mentioned, you can't worry about free agency 3 or 4 years from now when you have these stars on the market now. You can't not pretend to you can't say to yourself, yeah, we're not going to improve now because we're worried about Judge's contract in 4 years. That doesn't make sense to me. And worst case scenario with Harper, or you want to look at it in another way, you know, maybe he could have played first base too. He's clearly athletic enough. He's a left-handed bat. He could have played first base. And right now you're going into the season with Luke Voit and Greg Bird. And Luke Voit is trying to prove he wasn't a fluke last year. And Bird is trying to prove that he can stay healthy and he's worthy of the hype. So, there was no reason. Again, there's no reason why they couldn't be in on either of those guys. It never made sense to me why they weren't ever serious about either. Cashman was very honest, saying that he hadn't even spoken to Scott Boras. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't know why they're not being the Yankees that everybody knew from the early 2000s.
I mean, I just think the Yankees are full of it because right now I think now to me they come across as liars, Joe. So they throwing out this whole Arenado thing that they was trying to trade, and I think they just say that to appease us as fans. So we can be like, oh, the Yankees are trying to go after Arenado. Meanwhile, Arenado signs a deal with the Colorado Rockies, an arbitration deal, whatever the case may be. But there's a chance he may even go back there.
Yep, and that's why I said I think that narrative at some point that's got to end. And we just got to look at it for what it is. And the Yankees just don't really feel like it, like improving their team. I mean, look at the Cubs last year. I mean, the Cubs said to themselves, well, we have Javi Baez, and we have Anthony Rizzo, and we have Chris Bryant. These are all guys that we're going to have to pay at some point, but they still went out and spent money on Yu Darvish.
Well, that's regardless, what bothers me, Joe.
Regardless of how you feel about Darvish, I mean, you got to go for it at some point. You got to bring in guys to improve your team.
You just said that, and that's what bothers me, because if we take away this past year where as a matter of fact, the Red Sox, richest team ever to win a World Series, but 2 years ago, Houston went on a spending spree. So as those final pieces because they felt like they were there, right? The year before that, the Cubs went on their spending spree. Jason Hayward, Ben Zobrist, they felt like they were there. The Yankees, by not doing that, they're telling me that even though they have this World Series or bust mantra, that I don't necessarily think that they care about that. I really think that Hal is starting to operate like, I just want your money. I want your belief. I want you to believe, because when you believe, you pay more. And I'm just interested in making money. That's how I feel.
Yeah, and as a fan, you're totally entitled to feel that way, Mike. And like I mentioned, Hal has said in the past, in articles in the past to the media, that if there was ever a guy that to blow past the luxury tax for, they wouldn't be afraid to spend the money. And like I mentioned, if two 26-year-old superstars, one who's won an MVP, one who's probably going to win two in the National League over the next 10 years, wouldn't surprise anybody. If those guys aren't worth blowing past the luxury tax for, bringing in and spending the money on, then who is?
And both wanted to come here, might have taken less to get here.
Yeah. Yep.
It's crazy.
That wasn't it. I mean, listen, I think the three of us agree that giving Patrick Corbin all that money in those years was not the right move. But consider this. They weren't in it, and they went and used their top pitching prospect to get a guy who's going to be 29 years old, who's off injured, simply because he makes $9 million this year. And Paxton. And I'm not knocking him. The kid is uber talented when healthy, but he's never healthy. He's only had three years in his career, I think, where he's made 20 starts. But he makes $9 million.
Yeah, and when you consider that they weren't even in the Kluber sweepstakes when Kluber was being dangled, I mean, and then it's seeming match there between the Yankees and the Indians with the power-hitting third baseman maybe that the Indians would have wanted. I mean, who knows?
And you get them back there, you know, not for nothing, Joe, but you can also come dangle Clint Frazier back. You know, they're going to lose Michael Brantley. Hey, here's Clint Frazier back. Hey, you're trading Corey Kluber. Here's Justice Sheffield back. Oh, and we'll throw in Miguel Andujar. Why? Because we signed Manny Machado.
Yeah, and this is why I think when you really dig past the surface and see, oh, well, they signed DJ LeMahieu and they signed Adam Ottavino, who's been a very, very inconsistent reliever in his career.
That's not so bad.
I mean, he had a massive year in 2018, but throughout his career, he's just been inconsistent. So you signed him to a 3-year deal. I really don't understand the logic behind it. I mean, you bring back Happ and you bring back Britton, two guys you're familiar with. I think the Britton signing was smart to bring him back. But, yeah, like I said, it really felt like it feels like they played it abundantly safe this offseason. And it doesn't really make sense in a division where the Red Sox just won 108 games. I don't think they're going to be that good again, but the Rays are probably going to be a lot better. I think that they had one of the best offseasons this year in baseball, if not the best. It's going to be interesting to see what the Yankees develop. I mean, they did win 100 games last year. They're still a very good team, but I think fans have all the right to be angry that they didn't try harder to get one of the two big superstars.
Right now, are the Yankees primed to win a division over the Boston Red Sox, Joe, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that, again, the Yankees won 100 games last year, and I think that's lost in the fact that the Red Sox won 108, and they had a historic season last year. And consider that the Yankees won 100 games without Aaron Judge for 6 weeks, with a black hole at first base, with Gary Sanchez bad all year, with left field or the outfield being super thin. Giancarlo Stanton was getting used to playing in New York, and you know, his numbers were decent, but anybody will tell you maybe he didn't come through in the clutch as much as he probably would like to admit. And these are all things that acted against them, and they still won 100 games with a rookie manager who seems, and I don't want to stress seems, like he understands the mistakes that he made and is willing to improve on them heading into his second year. So you couple that with the fact that Boston, I just don't think they're going to win 108 games again this year. I just don't. Their bullpen is still an atrocity. Obviously, they performed in October, but you lose Joe Kelly, who was good for them, and you lose Craig Kimbrel, who's not coming back. I don't think Boston's going to be as good as they were last year.
And you can't move your starters. And you can't move your starters into the bullpen like you can in October.
Yeah, and so I think that all plays into it. I think the Rays are a lot better, and they're going to be a pain in the ass. I really believe that. But yeah, I still think the Yankees are probably heading into 2019 the best team in that division.
Wow. What bothers me though, Joe, is with all the things that we can say went wrong last year that just can't happen again. There are things that went right last year that we could also say, hey, you know, is that the outlier as well? You know, Aaron Hicks being one of them. We've never seen that kind of season from Aaron Hicks. You've been waiting for it, but we've never seen it. Luis Severino's first half. Dylan Betances struggled early, but was absolutely lights out. One of the best relievers in all of baseball. You know, from June on, middle May on. And there's a lot of things that went right that we don't necessarily know. I mean, the home runs, do they hit home runs at the same clip? Does Luke Voit go absolutely insane for the final 6 weeks of the season and actually carry the team to wins just on his back alone? A lot of things went right that you know, was kind of, you know, we didn't see coming either. And that's what worries me about their approach. It's easy to say, well, the stuff that didn't go right should go right, because I can sit here and tell you the stuff that went right last year, they probably shouldn't have. Ronald Torres hitting almost 300, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and I think part of that, too, is you have to look at Miguel Andujar, right? Do you expect Andujar to get better? Do you expect him to even replicate the success that he had as Rookie of the Year runner-up last year? Does he get better defensively? Does Gleyber Torres is he going to be good this year? And you lost him to injury for a little bit last year, and he faded down the stretch. What is Brett Gardner going to be? How do they figure out the left field situation? There's lots to go into it. And I think, to be fair, Mike, you do have to look at it both ways. But I think on paper, right now, the Yankees are probably the most complete team in that division. Also, you have to wonder how they get along with Troy Tulowitzki while Didi is out. Is DJ LeMahieu going to be able to hit in Yankee Stadium? Who, by the way, is a sub-100 OPS guy in his career. Even if he does make contact, it's never hard contact. So don't expect him to hit home runs, which kind of devalues the point of a utility man at that point. Because utility man, more than defense, you value their bat more than anything. So
it devalues being left-handed.
Yeah. So if you are not going to be if you're going to be a replacement level bat, then what's the point of bringing him in for 2 years?
Then you're Tyler Wade.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions there. There really is. I think that's fair. And you can poke holes top to bottom, 1 through 9, any way you want to slice it. But as it stands on February 24th, I do think the Yankees are probably the best team in that division still. I think that Boston just didn't do enough to try and improve. They took a step backwards. And you hear they want to slash payroll, which means that they're not going to bring back Kimball. And Joe Kelly is obviously with the Dodgers now. So relying on some 30-something-year-olds to try and keep that bullpen afloat. I think that in the AL East, more than any other division in baseball, I think that's key. And I just think that's their weakest area, and it's really bad how weak it is. So, yeah, we'll see how good they are. But I do think they're probably going to win the division.
And the crazy thing is, you know, me and Matt Mike was discussing this, and we've talked about this before, how that playoff game and, you know, a very important game, they bench Miguel Andujar, and then they play Andrew McCutchen, and then you turn around and you don't sign Manny Machado, and now look who's playing third base, the same person that you benched in the damn playoff game.
Yeah, so, this is what,
you know, I'm just sitting here like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, and I said it on your podcast before, guys, and this is an extreme example, but Matt Chapman had plus 27 defensive runs saved last year, right? The Oakland A's third baseman, which was, I don't think it's a stretch to say, I'm pretty sure that was the best in all of Major League Baseball. So he's an elite level defender, and he had, I want to say, an 8.3 baseball reference WAR number, wins above replacement, right? And then you look at Miguel Andujar, who had probably better or just as equal offensive numbers as Matt Chapman did. But he had negative 27 defensive runs saved, and he was only worth 1.2 or 2-point-something more. Bottom line is there was like a 6-win difference between the two. And there's a lot that goes into it, but again, even if Miguel Andujar takes a massive leap forward this year and he becomes, you know, if he goes from being a horrible defender to just below average, he's still going to be a really bad defender. And when you consider you have some guys on the staff who you need to get ground balls to, and then he's going to be there on the left side, it could hurt them. It could cost them. But we'll see how much he's improved. Everyone's saying he's improved defensively. I guess we're going to see in spring just how much he's improved.
24-year-olds don't get better on defense. I mean, yeah. not. They don't get extremely better on defense where they're now defensively a game changer.
Yeah, and I think, it's not so much opinion as it is fact, Mike, to be honest with you, because the advanced defensive stats have taught us one thing, and that's that defense is a skill. You can't really get better on defense. You can't really get worse on defense. I mean, you lose it as you get older.
You lose range.
Yeah, but, yeah, as you get older, but you don't really lose the ability to play the position. So if you're this bad at your age, 23, 24 season, then even if you get a little bit better, and you're still going to be really bad. So, yeah, I know a lot of people like to poo-poo the defensive stats, and I do think that it's a work in progress how well a lot of these work. But at the same time, they've taught us so much about what, you know, the true valuation of a defender and why errors are bad for the most part and just generally very inaccurate. So, again, if Miguel Andujar takes a massive leap forward this year, he's still going to be a very poor defender. And I think that I think that's something that the Yankees are going to have to monitor.
Here's my last thing on the Yankees, man, for me personally. But the only reason I'm jumping in is because it has to do with Miguel Andujar. The Yankees have tried this before and failed, right? We've seen them, Starlin Castro, his offensive approach, right? It took us to the ALCS where they see Starlin just wailing away at everything, showing no patience, for them to realize, hey, this offensive approach is not going to take us anywhere. We saw them do it then again with I'll give you another name, Alfonso Soriano from years back. He was a 40-40 guy, right? But they realized in that World Series against Arizona, like, this guy's never going to change, and we can't win with this approach. Why do they look at Miguel Andujar, who has the same exact approach, and think that they can win with him specifically?
You know, Mike, it's a good question. I do think that there is a place for aggressive hitters in a lineup, but at the same time, usually those guys are at the top of the lineup. You're looking at your one or two guys. You know, they're going to be able to draw walks, but they also have to be aggressive. At least that's a sabermetric analytics approach to it. If you're Miguel Andujar and the bases are loaded in the seventh inning with one out and you're wailing away at the first two pitches that you see, which is something that he did a lot last year. I mean, his on-base percentage is like 320 or 310 or something like that. It wasn't good. He never walked. So unless he really grows his eye, unless he really grew it over the offseason and he really got patient at the plate, who knows? But I don't see how that happened. I mean, Mike Moustakas has been the same way his entire career. He's always been a pretty high average guy, but he's also always been around a 300 on base percentage guy, 310 on base percentage guy. That's just not something that you can really get out of. You can work out of aggressive hitters. That's just in their DNA. So, yeah, it's tough for me to say that Andujar is really going to turn that corner and go from being a guy that hits 290 but gets on base 31% of the time to 35% of the time. I just don't see how that happens or how that benefits him as a player.
Okay, now, before we let you go, Joe, we close the show out off the topic of baseball. Giants safety Landon Collins cleaned out his locker. And now, you know, now they're going through this whole thing where he doesn't want to be tagged with the franchise label. What happens was that, do the Giants give him a contract? Because he's playing hardball with the Giants right now. So do the Giants sign him? Do the Giants say, oh, well, au revoir, go on and sign somebody else? How do you think that pans out? And why is he doing that?
Well, he was almost traded in the middle of the season, right? He was almost traded in the middle of the season. So maybe that's some hard feelings from Landon's part. If you're the Giants, I mean, if you pay Collins and you pay him the top dollar, whatever you think he's worth, at some point, a lot of these guys, I mean, are you going to trade Beckham? I don't see how that's really possible given his cap hit. I mean, they could. And a lot of these other guys are going to have to start getting paid. You have to rebuild that defense, too. And while Collins is a good player to build around, I mean, we're a few years removed from his all-pro season. He hasn't really improved since then. If anything, he might have taken a small step back. He's terrible in coverage.
Nobody. He can't cover.
Yeah, so, and I think that as we're seeing that with the Jets, we're seeing that with the Bears, with Eddie Jackson, we're seeing it with Derwin James in Los Angeles with the Chargers, that safeties are, the importance of safeties now are probably more prevalent than ever because teams are running out there with 11 personnel and they're throwing deep ends to the tight end all the time, and safeties are going to have to cover. So it wouldn't surprise me if the Giants let him walk because for money reasons, they're going to need the money to try and rebuild that horrific defense. And I think that's probably what's going to happen. I don't see him being franchise tagged. I think he gets a long-term deal from someone else.
Woo, there you have it, listeners.
Hey guys, I'm on the sneak in a football question. You're spending Mike Maccagnan's money. Who are you targeting first? You specifically, Joe Rivera, Sporting News, Colin. Who are you signing first? Most important signing of the
It all has to start with the offensive line. The first guy that I'm going after upgrade is from Denver. They have to do a better job of protecting Darnold. Listen, I think it's funny because a lot of what makes Darnold special is his ability to have bad offensive lines, right? He has that magical sloppiness where he can get away from the rush and he can avoid the rush. But I think that it's so important for him to have a solid offensive line, which is, I think, priority 1A has to be the offensive line from top bottom. So it starts with Matt Paredes from Denver, the center. I think he's key for them this offseason. I think that he's going to be a Jet, depending how much they pay him. But he's the first guy. If I'm Mike Maccagnan, he's the first guy I go after.
Why do I have the strangest feeling that the Jets are actually going to surpass the Giants? I just have that feeling.
They already have.
Not that they haven't. I was just about to say, not that they haven't already, but I'm just talking about, you know, as far as personnel moves and just doing the right thing.
I think that when you look at it, Lloyd, and I got to be honest, Saquon Barkley's the offensive rookie of the year, all this stuff, but it starts with that pick. It really does. And the second that you make that pick, you hit your wagon to Eli. And through the first eight games, let's not forget, they were 1-7 when it counted. And even when they won games, they beat nobodies in the process. So Eli showed you in 2018 that he's not an answer going forward. But the second that you passed on Darnold or Rosen or, you know, whoever else was available at that spot, Allen, you know, Lamar Jackson, if you want to go that far, you know, I just don't. I never understood it. Franchise quarterbacks, if they're there in the draft, you have to go get them. You can't wait around for them. They don't really shake loose ever in free agency, unless it's a guy like Kirk Cousins who pulled the wool over everyone's eyes as to what he was, or Peyton Manning who was coming off an injury. So I think the second that you have the opportunity to draft a successor, look at what the Chiefs did, right? And regardless of how you feel about Alex Smith, they went out and got Patrick Mahomes. They didn't play him, and look what he did this season. So I think the second that you have the opportunity to go out and get a franchise guy who you can count on for 12 to 15 years, you have to do it. And I think that it started with that Barkley pick, pretending that they were a win-now team when the fact is they weren't.
Now, do you think Haskins can be that type of quarterback? Because the Giants seem to be attached to him, and he seems to be attached to the Giants unless somebody trades up and takes him.
You know, I have serious doubts, Lloyd. I mean, the first is the Urban Meyer factor. I mean, what quarterback has he ever produced in his career? Has he ever nurtured in his career? Alex Smith, and that was, 15 years ago? So even Alex Smith, I mean, he was never really worthy of the number one overall billing. And I do like Alex Smith as a player. I always did. But he was never a franchise changer. He just wasn't. So I don't really know that Haskins is the answer. Coming off a one-year starter, you know, I don't know. I don't buy into it. Ohio State has never produced a first-round quarterback before, so I don't know what he's going to be. I mean, obviously, it's not fair to place his potential on the history of a program, but at the same time, what has Ohio State ever done to prove that they can produce quality NFL starters, especially in the first round? They never have. So, yeah I'm questioning Haskins, his first round, his franchise quarterback potential, but it really seems like the Giants are going to go that route.
As I said, if somebody trades up and takes him, the Giants should then therefore draft the damn tackle. Like, I wouldn't even draft Kyler Murray. I would just draft a tackle. They need help on that offensive line. They need help on they need help all over the damn place.
Yeah, that's what I would do. I'm being very honest with you. If somebody happens to move into that, for Arizona, what I'm doing right now, and that's we're having this conversation, it's laughable that they think that they can move up without trading anything, you know, maybe even Odell Beckham. But I'd be trying to get Josh Rosen. I would be trying to flip, you know, the sixth pick for Josh Rosen, maybe Chandler Jones and Josh Rosen, you know, in a package for number six. Like as Joe says, they're committed to Eli, to this win-now mode. Might as well go use that sixth pick to get win-now guys. And if you can land Josh Rosen and Chandler Jones for the sixth pick, you know, Arizona could then use it on Kyler Murray. And they could get Nick Bosa and Kyler Murray. Why not?
Yeah. And I think that the Giants have a serious question to answer this offseason. I think putting it off by a season, we saw how good Darnold was down the stretch. He was really living up to his potential the last 4 weeks of the season. He was the best quarterback in football by quarterback rating over the last 4 weeks after he returned from the injury. So I think the Giants are a year behind here, and they have, like you mentioned, Lloyd, they have so many holes to fill. This is not a 1 or 2 year fix. We're talking about a full rebuild, and by the time they're probably going to be good enough to contend again, you're going to have to start paying guys. You're going to have to start paying Barkley. Beckham's going to be out of his prime.
Barkley is already top five in pay at his position, which is another part of the problem. Yeah. And Beckham's already number one. So now you're talking about this rebuild. What do you do? Some guys are already being paid.
Yep. That's the road that the Giants chose, right? It never made sense to me. Bringing in Gettleman was always questionable to me because he was a guy that's very old in his ways. He's very set in his ways. If he took Christian McCaffrey with a top 10 pick, there was no reason he wasn't going to take Saquon Barkley with the number 2 overall pick. And I think that organizationally, they're so in love with Eli and what he used to be that it's blinding what he is now. So I don't really understand what they're going to do. I don't know what they're going to do. Something tells me they might not even take a quarterback in this draft. And if they don't, it's going to be a massive mistake again. But we'll see what they do. They're always good for a laugh.
I'm always sitting there scratching my damn head when it comes to the Giants. I tell you, the Giants like the damn Knicks, man. But you know, that's another topic in itself. But Joe, we want to thank you for joining the show today. We really appreciate it. Do you have any social media outlets? Do you want to know give to our listeners?
Yeah, you guys can always find me on Twitter at Joe Rivera SN and on sportingnews.com. You can find all my stuff there. But yeah, Twitter's the main spot. I always engage with my endearing fans.
Listen, is follow Joe on Twitter. I follow him. He's great, very intuitive. He dishes out a lot of information. A good follow. So, fans, please be sure to follow Joe on Twitter. Joe, we want to thank you again. We want to thank our listeners for sticking with us, keeping this thing going. We want to thank our producer, AO Omar Baker, for keeping this thing going as well. So, listeners, please have a safe and blessed week. And me and Mad Mike, I'll see you in 7 days. So, AO, let's get up out of here, baby.
And just like that, that brings our show to a close. All of you fine ladies and gentlemen that have been listening, I thank you. If you subscribe, thank you. If not, please do so. And make sure you share it with your friends and your family, anybody that you know. But get into some sports talk. You got the best sports podcast, in my very humble opinion. The best sports podcast, the real sports and the real talk, right here with the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show. As you already know, episodes drop every single Monday. Head over to LloydAThompson.com. Follow on Instagram and Twitter at Lloyd A. Thompson. That's with 2 L's. Make sure you throw the second L in. And we'll catch y'all in a week. Peace.